Art Forest, Chicago.
Good morning. I'm Sabrina Patch for Appellant Gabrielle M., a minor, by her parents Stanley and Teresa. This action is pursuant to a Title IX action of the Education Amendments of 1972, and there's also a pendant claim pursuant to Illinois common law for intentional infliction of emotional distress. Appellant is appealing a summary judgment ruling in favor of the defendants, Park Forest, Chicago High School District, District 163, granted by the district court October the 9th, 2001.
One of your claims is that the district court waited too long before granting the request for a transfer. Does the record tell us exactly when this request was made?
Yes, the request was made. First, you have to consider that the parents did not find out anything until late October, October the 21st. The parents were up at the school the next day, October the 22nd, and after they spoke with Gabrielle and found out that she had been subject to this sexual conduct by Jason, they requested immediately a transfer of Jason from Gabrielle's classroom. The transfer did not occur until November. However, it wasn't the transfer that the principal, McJimsey, had promised the parents. He had promised the parents that Jason would be separated from all of Gabrielle's classes. But as late as March 1999, we discovered that Jason was still in Gabrielle's lunch and recess blacktop periods. And because of that, she was still coming in contact with him, and she was still experiencing anguish because of that. So even though the transfer happened in November, it wasn't a complete transfer, and McJimsey deliberately misled the parents into thinking that it was. The district court's ruling premised its conclusion the district court's ruling is premised upon its conclusion that the school district did not first discover Jason's sexual conduct until October the 21st, 1998. And the record does not support that finding. The record supports that Gabrielle, at the beginning of the school year in late August 1998, was a cheerful young lady. She was independent. She was a go-getter. She was looking forward to the beginning of the kindergarten school year. Shortly after that, within the first 2 weeks of September, Gabrielle's demeanor made a dramatic change. Her parents noticed that she would not go to sleep at night. She would come into their room and ask if she'd sleep with them. She wouldn't go to the bathroom without a sibling standing at the door or a parent standing at the door. She cried every time it was time for her to go to school. And this happened the first 2 weeks of September. Now, after these symptoms were apparent to the parents, they did discuss taking Gabrielle to the doctor, but they didn't at that particular time. Now, on October the 21st, the late part of October, that is when they first got the first contact from the school. This came in the form of Mr. Anthony, a psychologist from the school, who called the parents. But he gave the parents sketchy information to the point they did not know what he was talking about. And he also identified a sibling of Gabrielle. He said it was the daughter in Ms. Ratcliffe's class and Gabrielle is in Ms. Maury's class. So, of course, the parents queried the wrong sibling. And that's what prompted them to go to the school the next day. Even when they went to the school the next day, Principal McJimsey was still evasive, prompting the parents to go to the district to talk to the superintendent. They were not allowed to talk to the superintendent. They were not allowed to talk to Mr. Anthony, the psychologist. They went back to the school, and when Teresa finally got McJimsey to tell her, he finally admitted that, oh, it is Gabrielle. But the information was still sketchy. They still did not know the extent of what had happened. When Teresa took Gabrielle out of school, before she could get to the car, she broke down crying, and she is the one that told them that Jason had been bothering her, had been doing nasty stuff to her since the first day of school. Now, Dr. Reynolds testified that the first day of school was the last week of August, and Gabrielle testified that it started happening the first week of school. Now, I'd like you to take a look at the classroom. The classroom has 20 to 23 students. It has a full-time teacher, and it also has a full-time teacher aide. Both Ms. Mullery and Ms. Roselli, the teacher and the teacher aide, testified at deposition that the children are never left alone. On the background of this, they want us to believe that they knew nothing about this sexual conduct against Gabrielle until October the 21st, when the parents found out. I submit that they knew, that there's an issue of fact if they knew, and that Gabrielle's conduct changing that dramatically could not have gone unnoticed with the teachers and with Jason doing these activities in the school in a classroom of 23 with two teachers who never left the children unsupervised. That could not have gone unnoticed to the teachers.
What were the ages? They were 5 or 6?
Some of them were 5 and some of them were 6. Gabrielle turned 6 on September the 9th, I believe, but school started the last week of August.
So she was 5 but 6.
Right, 5 and 6.
And Jason was same age?
Jason was the same age, correct. The defendants would have us to believe that Jason was this angelic kid from the beginning of the school year, and that all of a sudden, October the 21st, when the parents found out, that is when they had noticed that Jason was exhibiting this sexual conduct.
When was it identified as sexual conduct? Wasn't the first incident he jumped on her back or something?
Yes, the first incident was he jumped on her back, but then there were subsequent incidences where in the computer room he grabbed his crouch, spread his legs and started rubbing himself against Gabrielle. There were incidences during the reading class where he put his hands in the pants of a couple of the girls, and Gabrielle told her mother that he touched her on her breast and on her private parts. Now let's take a look at October. As I said, the first contact was October the 21st when Mr. Anthony called. Mr. Anthony was vague, and there was a reason he was vague. When Teresa talked to Principal McGimsey, Mr. McGimsey showed that he was very angry that the counselor had even called her. He was mad that he had called her. And so that is why Mr. Anthony was vague, because he wanted to tell the parents, but he was afraid to tell the parents. So he just gave them enough information to put them on notice. But even after that, even after October 21st, when Teresa was forced to pull teeth to get information, Mr. McGimsey still did not transfer Jason from the class, from all of the classes, and Gabrielle was still subject to seeing him at a time when she was going to see a psychologist, Dr. Mahoney, to get over these incidences.
Mr. McGimsey,
I'm sorry.
Did Gabrielle ask for this transfer or ask for a transfer?
What happened was that she began seeing Dr. Mahoney in November of 1998, and after March of 1999, when we discovered that she still was coming into contact with this kid and it was very upsetting to her, Dr. Mahoney suggested to Teresa that we request that she be transferred out of the school. And so she was transferred out of the school.
They asked
for
that toward the end of the second year?
Correct. It was around year? It was March 1999, so I think we made the request in April. And so she finished out that year, and then they granted the request for the following year.
All right. Mr. McGimsey, it started out, at least the first contact or conversation you had regarding this, that he warned Jason about his behavior and suggested or asked that his parents contact him?
I'm sorry?
That Jason's parents contact McGimsey?
There was some testimony that that McGimsey contacted Jason's parents and that he did have a talk with him. But as I said, that was in October when this had been going on since, as Gabrielle had testified, the very first day of school. And it was only after the parents had come to the school and demanded some type of explanation. Prior to that, there was no action taken whatsoever. And that's what's important about the analyzing these facts with the deliberate and different standard that's set out in Davis.
Up.
I'm sorry?
Your time is
almost
up. Oh,
yes, it is. Okay, thank you. I still have a couple of minutes for rebuttal, right?
You haven't got it. You've got it.
I don't. Okay. Well, we would just ask that the district court decision
well,
be
you'll reversed. Have some time. But
I do. Okay. Thank you.
Sure. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Susan Glover on behalf of School District 163 and George McGimsey individually. The standard of review in this case is de novo, given that the school district appellee asserts that in viewing the facts in light most favorable to the appellant, there is no genuine issue of material fact.
Let me just ask you this.
Yes.
If Jason continued to harass Gabrielle at recess after his misbehavior became known to school officials, and if she reported this harassment to her teacher and the principal, as she indicated in her deposition,
yes,
then wouldn't there at least be a question of fact as to whether the school district should have moved faster to move Jason to a different recess group?
Well, Your Honor, we contend that, and the evidence shows that the school district acted immediately. The school district first had knowledge at of the alleged behavior, which we do not even contest is actually sexually harassing behavior.
Wait. Say that again.
We contest, first of all, that the behavior is even sexually harassing in nature. Second of all,
The first act was jumping on the back.
And it's important to look in light of the Davis versus Monroe County case, where they say that children regularly interact in a manner that may not be appropriate for adults, but would certainly be seen as child play or not sexually harassing for small children.
Let's go to the second type of activity.
Sure. You're relating to the incident after Jason had been moved to a different classroom where Gabrielle reported that he was still bothering her at recess.
Bothering other children.
Exactly. The school district immediately then acted after Jason was separated for 2 weeks from all other students, and this is a six-year-old, all other students to sit alone during the lunch period, and the record reflects that, then switched the entire classroom lunch period within days, if not the next day.
But the question is this. Did the school officials permit Gabrielle and Jason to share recess time after he switched classrooms?
The school district switched classrooms. The recess time was the same. However, his classroom was eating lunch while her classroom was on the playground.
Did they share recess time?
He was separated from the class. He did not share recess time. The way the lunch period sets out, and the record shows this, is that there's one common lunch period.
We're not talking about the lunch period.
Right.
But
the lunch period is split into eating and recess. And while his class was eating, her class was on recess, and vice versa. So there was no interaction. He was also made to sit alone for 2 weeks by himself and not participate in any lunch period. When the teachers realized that at that point there was no further complaints, he was then allowed to go to recess.
So it's your position that Jason was not left in Gabrielle's recess group for 4 months?
No. Yes, that is our contention. Yes. That he was immediately he was pulled out by himself, and that he was separated for 2 weeks by himself, and when he was actually elected to go back to recess, it was separated at this time where there was only a certain passing period where they might come in contact with one another.
And that's what the uncontested facts will show.
That is my recollection of the facts, yes, Your Honor. We also would contest that, you know, this was not sexually harassing behavior, so they don't even meet the threshold necessary in this case. Gabrielle testified that Jason was bothering her and that he was doing nasty stuff. And the Supreme Court pointed out in Davis that it's important to look at the age of the harasser and the victim, which are both kindergarten students here, as well as the number of individuals involved. We only have one instance where Gabrielle was actually the person who was the behavior was directed.
This is so important.
Sure.
It's my understanding that he was separated for 2 weeks of that four-month period incorrect?
No. But unless my memory fails me, it's important to realize the setup of the lunch period, which was divided into an eating period and a recess period. And my recollection of the facts of this case are that they did not have a contemporaneous both time eating in the cafeteria and both time on the playground.
There was no opportunity in that period, that time frame, for them to have contact.
That is my recollection, yes. And he was, and you are correct, Your Honor, he was separated for 10 minutes, or for, excuse me, 2 weeks, and from all recess altogether. And then once the teachers determined that he was behaving properly during his lunch period, and there were no further incidents, and have never to this date, the record shows, any further incidents relating to Jason that he was allowed to go back to recess.
Well, he couldn't misbehave if he was kept by himself, could he?
No, that was only for a two-week period. But
no,
after
he couldn't misbehave during that time.
During any other the classroom time as well. All of this behavior, for the most part, with the exception of the incident on the playground, took place allegedly in the classroom. And so there were no further incidents once he was transferred to a different classroom with any students. And all these, the only incident directly related to Gabrielle was the incident in the computer room where he allegedly put his hands on his crotch and leaned over to her.
Let me ask you this: to the point where they were unable to have physical contact in the school setting, how many incidents were there of alleged sexual harassment?
I just want to make sure I'm answering your question correctly. After he was moved to a different
classroom,
From the very beginning, there are the allegations are that there were the incident where he jumped on her back along with other students on the playground. He was immediately then disciplined. There's an incident where he was in the computer room, leaning over her, touching his crotch, where he was immediately taken to the principal's office. That same day, there was an incident where other boys in the classroom, not Gabrielle, said that he was showing his underwear. And he was immediately removed, told that he would have to spend the rest of the day in the principal's office. And
that didn't relate to Gabrielle.
That was not relating to Gabrielle. Only relating to Gabrielle is the incident where he was in the computer room, touching his crotch and leaning over her. And then there was an incident where he was brought to Anthony, the psychologist's office, where he was allegedly misbehaving with another group of girls.
Just talking about Gabriel.
Yeah, where she was then said to be a co-participant in that behavior. But the only complaint relating to Gabriel is in the computer room where he had his hands on his crotch, and then where she complained after he was transferred that he was bothering, that she saw him during the lunch period.
Now, how do you define this as not being sexual harassment?
We would say that it's not sexual harassment, first of all, because Anthony, the psychologist, said that he did not understand the implications of his actions, that as a kindergartner, kindergartners do not...
You mean Jason did not understand?
Excuse me, Anthony, the psychologist, stated that Jason did not understand the implications of his actions, and they have nothing to contest that in the record. The psychologist stressed that these are kindergartners. This is a very common, although not appropriate, but common behaviors for kindergartners to participate in. It's the playing doctor type behavior that we're talking about.
And that's a new one.
Pardon me?
Just what you said is a new one. That's very regular behavior.
He said not uncommon, but definitely inappropriate, but not uncommon, and that these students did not understand the sexual nature of their behavior. And this is also something that was considered by the Supreme Court in Davis, where it said that in the school setting, students often behave in gender-specific conduct that is not necessarily seen as sexual harassment, but is otherwise upsetting to students nonetheless. We'd also suggest that there was no evidence to show that the school district was deliberately indifferent in this matter. Every time they had notice of an incident, the staff acted immediately and appropriately to remove these students, up to the point where they removed Gabrielle from the school because of the parents' continued complaint, and as well as her two sisters who were at the same school were transferred.
Let me just reiterate this, if
sure.
I can, with you. There were only two incidents of contact, however you describe it. One jumping on the back, the other doing some of the scratch in the computer room.
That is specifically relating only to Gabrielle, yes.
Then there was one other. There was a group situation where she was one of several girls and he was involved in it.
That's correct.
So those are the three.
That's correct. And then there's her complaint that she still saw him in the cafeteria and that
saw him but did not have
contact. She stated that he bothered her but was never specific.
What's the time frame from the first incident till...
These all took place in October, towards the end of October. Mulry, the teacher, said she first noticed the jumping on the back sometime to mid to late October, and then we're talking about October 23rd to where he was transferred the first week of November. So I would also like to point out that as far as it relates to severe and pervasive harassment to deny educational access, Dr. Mahoney, the own therapist in this case, first of all said noted in her report that the symptoms first began in the last week of August, which is before the start of the school year. Second of all, Mahoney noted in her report that Gabrielle's school functioning was good at all times and academic functioning was not affected. Given that, we would ask that the decision of the lower court be upheld and that summary judgment stand in this matter. Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Mahoney indicated that she related all of Gabrielle's symptoms, and these were pretty severe symptoms for a cheerful, independent little girl to all of a sudden make a dramatic change.
Forgive me, Ms. Hatch, but did the defendants leave Jason in Gabrielle's recess group for 4 months after the harassment was reported?
Absolutely. Gabrielle complained to her parents in March that Jason was still bothering her, and her parents said, how could he be? He's not in your class. And she said, yeah, he's in my recess and my blacktop and my lunch period. And that is when her counsel wrote the letter, which is of record, to the school to say, what is going on here? So, yes, as late as March 1999, Gabrielle was still in recess and lunch period with Jason, and he was still trying to get her attention. That is what she said in her deposition. Okay. Dr. Mahoney did relate Gabrielle's symptoms to what had happened in the school, and school began at the end of August. That was Dr. The superintendent's testimony. It began at the end of August. Thank you very much, and we would ask that the lower court decision be reversed and this case be remanded for trial on the merits. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. We will take the case.